as the U.S. Secretary of State urges Turkey to speed up work on regime change in Syria, some are suggesting the foreign-backed war against Damascus is losing momentum. On this edition of The Debate, we're asking who's responsible for insecurity in Syria and what stands in the way of a peaceful solution to the crisis.
Endless fighting with no achievement for foreign-backed insurgents in Syria. An unverified video of militants trading fire with Syrian government forces. The insurgents have been striving to carve out a buffer zone in different parts of Syria since nearly 2 years ago. After a series of failed attempts in the north and near the Turkish border, the militants are now targeting Daraa near the Jordanian border. They're engaged in fierce clashes with the government forces there. Al-Qaeda offshoot Al-Nusra Front is set to form the backbone of the insurgency against the Assad government. In a new message to the militants, Al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri has claimed the Syrian government has begun to collapse and called on the insurgents to be ready to create their own state. But the situation on the ground shows that the government is far from collapse. The Syrian president is in control of the state. In his latest interview with the media, Bashar al-Assad once again blamed the violence plaguing his country and foreign countries. He singled out Turkey, saying its prime minister has Syrian blood on his hand.
Turkey's government officially harbors terrorists and sends them to Syria.
Turkey has allowed both weapons and militants to flow into Syria via its territory. Ankara has also frequently called for the downfall of Assad. Assad has also slammed the Arab League for handing Damascus' seat to the Syrian opposition.
The Arab League itself needs legitimacy. It's a league that represents Arab countries, not Arab people. And it lost its legitimacy a long time ago because Arab League member states no longer represent their own people.
In his interview, Assad looked confident of his victory over the insurgents. This, observers believe, originates from several factors, both external and internal. The U.S. and France that are calling for Assad's ouster are hesitant about sending arms for the insurgents. As for the U.S., it is showing no appetite to intervene in Syria, given the escalating tension on the Korean Peninsula. Meanwhile, Assad's forces have regained control of several chunks of land they had lost some time ago, including those in the strategic city of Homs. They also seem to have the edge over the militants.
You're watching The Debate. Joining me now live from London is Mr. Danny Mackey, co-founder of Syrian Youth in UK, and with us live via Skype from California, Mr. Daniel Pipes, director of the Middle East Forum. Thank you for joining The Debate, gentlemen. My first question to our guest in London, Mr. Mackey. First of all, do you agree that the foreign-backed war on Syria is losing momentum, as some have been saying?
Of course, in some sense, you'd have to argue that the desire for intervention is decreasing. Ultimately, the powers which have created this crisis regionally and internationally are facing many blocks in terms of really forcing a regime change situation in Syria. This is manifested by Turkey's lack of real intervention. Also, NATO stated that they would not intervene directly in the Syria crisis, nor do they have the desire to really take any sort of military steps into seeking regime change. Countries such as Saudi Arabia and Qatar are really alone in this crisis. The European Union and the United States of America have reached a point of really lacking the credibility and the own desire for forcing any type of changes in the government inside of Syria. So we could argue that there is a quagmire, internally speaking. In terms of regional and international politics, Syria has become a concept, an issue which is discussed regularly, but there is no real initiatives or anything which can really take it towards a political solution. At the end of the day, ultimately, you have the rebels who reject any political settlement. They are keen on militarising the conflict and entering a new phase.
So, Mr. Mackey, you're basically telling us here that there is no interest right now for a direct military intervention from regional players. Before you continue with that, I'd just like to bring in Mr. Daniel Pipes on this as well. Now, Mr. Pipes, some are saying, however, that foreign players, they're not giving up. They're reportedly trying to provide a buffer zone, we're hearing, for insurgents in the southern province of Daraa near Jordan's borders. But the question is, will they make it this time, or will this attempt be similar to previous failed efforts to create similar buffer zones in Aleppo or Raqqa and Homs?
As in any civil war, the momentum changes from side to side. and at present it could be that the Syrian government is doing well. But I think overall, if one looks at this two-year war and looks towards the future, there seems to be no question that the Syrian regime is slowly, bit by bit, losing ground, and that should the war continue for a long time to come, that the Syrian regime will be overthrown. So the world forces are generally behind the rebels, and I think they will win. I hope they don't, but I think they will.
So back to Mr. Mackey on this. Mr. Pipe's suggesting there that with the amount of support that the fighters, the militants there have, it's going to happen sooner or later. They are going to be able to win this war. Do you agree with that?
No, I do not agree. I don't think it is a prerequisite that or a preconceived notion that the rebels will win. We ultimately understand that the Syrian army is a conventional army, which has more years in training, has the weapon systems, and has the logistical and communication support to really deal with these armed groups hard defeats in terms of a military sense. But I really fail to comprehend how anyone can state that it is a civil war. It is by no means a Syrian-on-Syrian crisis or a Syrian-on-Syrian war. This is manifested by the thousands of foreign fighters in Syria. We could argue that there is a regional war. It is a proxy war at best, but not a Syrian civil war, as he stated from the USA. What we ultimately have now is the presence of thousands of European jihadists coming from European countries, thousands of jihadists coming from other Arab countries. So Syria is ultimately now turned into a theatre for jihad, a theatre for terrorism, one which does really threaten the future of the region. Yeah. The radicalisation, internally speaking, in Syria does threaten the future of Syria. This also poses a significant predicament to the security of the whole of the wider Middle East, also the wider Muslim and Arab world. What we understand, Iraq, Lebanon, Turkey, these are all states which will not be able to maintain a level of political stability internally speaking.
And something you raised there, Mr. Mackey, sorry for jumping in here. Something
that groups in Syria is continuous.
Yeah, something you raised there is the looking at the face of the crisis right now in Syria. We're seeing the amount of bloodshed, we're seeing the amount of violence, civilians being killed. I'd just like to bring in Mr. Pipes here on this as well. Daniel Pipes, some analysts have been saying that what's being called the ambitiousness or the plans or whatever of big powers in their interference with the affairs of Syria right now has not, I mean, in all countries that they have been involved in, for instance, these powers, it's not always ended in killings and serious critical situations like in Syria. Why are we seeing this interference leading to so much bloodshed and violence in Syria?
Well, if we look at the three states where there has been a successful rebellion, in Tunisia, Libya, and in Egypt, one sees that in two of the three, in Tunisia and Egypt, the leaders gave up quickly. And in the third one, there was such massive Western support that Gaddafi lost. In Syria, it's different. The regime and the military behind it are absolutely intent on defeating the rebels, and the Western powers have, and their Middle Eastern allies, Turkey, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, have not been that active. So we have a civil war that continues and could continue for a long time to come. But it looks to me that the momentum is with the rebels. And indeed, as I said before, I don't want them to win, but I think they will win.
So you're saying here that the difference with Syria, when you compare it to, for instance, Tunisia or Libya, is that their leaders there step down more quickly, or that the fight now that the Syrian government is having with the militants is a more aggressive fight. Mr. Mackey, would you say that that is the difference with the situation in Syria?
The real difference between the situation in Syria and what happened in other Arab countries is that in other Arab countries you had more of a peaceful uprising. In Syria there was violence from the very first day. In Syria you have the presence of Israel, which is what ultimately makes the United States of America more cautious in taking steps towards the Syria crisis. The main reason America wants to keep eyes and observe what is happening in Syria is because of the border with Israel. They see that removing the Assad government at this current moment in time would be beneficial for the future security of Israel, as Assad has supported many of Israel's enemies and has taken a stance which is anti-Israeli in the past. So what we argue, this is a concept which relates to the new Middle East, as Peres described it, as carving out a new future for the Middle East and the Arab world, one which rejects which is with the hegemony of the United States of America, one where you have states which do not allow for their own sovereignty to be kept intact. What we essentially have puppet states, like we have in the Gulf Arab states, like Qatar, Saudi Arabia, states which are strategic allies to the United States of America. So in Syria, we could argue the geopolitical element and the geostrategic element as well is much larger than any of the other Arab countries. What we have now is an indirect intervention in Syria by many regional Arab and non-Arab states. Mm-hmm. What we have is a direct proxy war between states such as Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and the United States, who all seek to destroy Iranian resolve in the region. We all understand that Syria and Iran have the greatest strategic alliance in the Middle East, and America seek to target Iran by destroying Syria. So it is very clear from a geopolitical perspective. Ultimately, we could argue that the presence of the thousands of foreign radical fighters, their links with Al-Qaeda, shows that the Western powers now are essentially allied non-directly with the radical Islamic movements in the region, such as Al-Nusra Front. But one great differentiation is that the Muslim Brotherhood and these extremist elements in Tunisia and Egypt and Libya are very different from the type which are involved in Syria. The Muslim Brotherhood in Syria has a very atrocious record in human rights. It is an organization which is sectarian and which is brutally, in a militant sense, is a very militant armed wing of political Islam, which is near to Al-Qaeda. You cannot argue that the Muslim Brotherhood in Syria or Al-Nusra Front is very similar to the ones in Tunisia or Libya or in fact Egypt. Like, there is an ultimate problem of terminology.
Yeah, that brings us to the question of who is then responsible for this crisis being prolonged in Syria. But before I ask that question, let's just take a look at some of the comments that have been posted on our Facebook page by our viewers, and we'll be back.
The reason why the West does this with foreign insurgents is because we, the people in the West, do not want to pay for this senseless murder. So the Western government steal tax dollars from us and do it anyway. The insurgents have failed so many times. They cannot succeed this time as well. Bravo! Syrians show to the Western powers that they don't own the world. There is a reason why the armed opposition is failing to occupy Syria. It is the Syrian people who support the government and pledged allegiance to it. History also teaches us that no militants can succeed without the support of the people. As they are supported by the CIA and Britain and the regional allies, the militants will not give up easily. Western powers will keep them alive at any cost to use them as needed through Saudi Arabia.
Comments being posted on our Facebook page there by some of our viewers who've been commenting on this edition of the debate, the subject today. I'll go to Daniel Pipes now with this next question. As I said earlier on, who should we point as responsible for this crisis being prolonged? A lot of people, Mr. Pipes, have been saying that the fact that the Arab League, that the United States and its allies are saying that this funding, this arming should continue is not helpful at all, because how else could you describe it rather than saying that they are funding terrorism in Syria?
There's no question that the rebels are engaged in terrorism. I completely agree. There's also no question that it was the regime that began the violence. It was initially a non-violent rejection of the Assad government, and the Assad government responded with violence. So there's much blame to be shared on both sides. I don't think we will get far if we look at this through moral terms. I look at it in a different way. I see a Salafi movement on one side, and I see a horrible dictatorship on the other side, and I don't want either side to win, because I think they're both really quite awful.
So, Mr. Pipes, the question is then, how do you think, however, that this continued funding is going to help this crisis? I mean, with the terrorists continuing to act, with the government continuing to fight them, how is this going to end? Is this not going to prolong the situation?
Yes, I think it will prolong it. I think the only way out is to find another force that is neither a secular dictatorship, Alawi dictatorship, Syri dictatorship, like the Assad government, nor a jihadi Salafi insurgency like the rebels are. Neither of these are a solution to the future. Everyone of goodwill should seek out something that is moderate, modern, secular, can be a basis for future Syrian government.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go back to our guest, Mr. Mackey, in London on this. A lot of people, Mr. Mackey, have been saying that there are three groups of countries involved here. One group would include Saudi Arabia, Qatar and Bahrain. The other would be the US, Britain, France, Turkey and Israel. And they're saying that these two groups specifically have the same goal of overthrowing Assad's government. At the same time, however, they differ on what kind of government should come after Assad. While one group is looking for, they say, a Wahhabi Salafist government, the other one is looking for a Western affiliated government. And they're saying that's what's making this crisis prolonged. Would you agree with that?
It depends how you want to really qualify this. We could argue that there is a group, as you said, Saudi Arabia and Qatar, who seek an extremist Islamist government inside of Syria to promote their geopolitical, ideological and religious interests in the region, to give them, as the Turkish example was with Islamic democracy, as in secular, having a secular state, but with an Islamist parties. Or you have this mix of ideologies between secularism and Islamism. However, the concept that in Syria, this mix of ideologies is impossible, as the majority of Syrians are secular, they reject extremism. Even the Islamists in Syria are relatively moderate before this crisis. Syria is a state which is famed for its moderation. The Western countries seek a political interest which is different from that of the Gulf countries. Now, the main funding is coming from Qatar and Saudi Arabia. However, the flow of arms is coming from Turkey. Now, Turkey is involved with NATO, and Turkey's alliances with the West are as strong as Saudi Arabia and Qatar's. So we could arguably blame Turkey, as more than all of these other states, for the crisis and the lack of stability in Syria. The Turkish borders are open, and the flow of arms, which is coming through Croatia, as stated by the New York Times, through other states, the 600 European jihadists, they're all coming through Turkey. Turkey is the main agitator in the Syria crisis, and Turkey is essentially committing political suicide because its own population rejects the fact that it supports the armed opposition. And we cannot necessarily argue that this armed opposition has any relation to democracy. Mm-hmm. Your guest from America stated that he said an Alawite dictatorship. First of all, the concept of dictatorship is completely irrelevant in this current moment of time now, because the opposition are using more dictatorial methods than the current government. Mm-hmm. We could argue the countries in the Gulf Arab states which support the so-called uprising are much more dictatorial than the Syrian mm-hmm. government, and remain more dictatorial and have no social rights. So it is not an issue of democracy. Al-Nusra Front do not adhere to the concept of democracy. So what it is a struggle between moderation and radicalization.
Yeah.
A struggle between moderate Islam, as represented by the Martyr Sheikh al-Bouti, and the Syrian government, against the extremist radical fundamentalist Islam, which is supported by Saudi Arabia and Qatar, mm-hmm. on religious, ethnic and political fault lines. Yeah. We could argue now that the United States now seeks to prolong the Syria crisis so that both sides kill each other, and the United States can essentially pursue their geopolitical hegemonic interests with a loss of life, which doesn't really affect them. The United States do not want a victory for mm-hmm. the Syrian rebels or the Syrian government.
We're
so
seeing
it's deadlocked
the United
in terms
States,
of the United
Mr.
States
Mackey.
Of America.
Yeah. I'm sorry for stopping you, because we are short of time. I'd just like to put this question to Mr. Pipes. We are seeing the United States, Mr. Pipes, saying that we are looking for a way in which a political transition can take place in Syria. But how can that take place while the militancy is ongoing? I mean, we're hearing Assad saying that we are ready for dialogue with all parts of the opposition, he said, both inside and outside of Syria, under any conditions, without preconditions, he said. We just want the militants, he's been saying, to lay down their arms so we can start dialogue, and we are ready for the reforms that people have been demanding. But what is standing in the way of that?
I agree with you that U.S. policy is unrealistic. Basically, it is an attempt to support certain of the rebels and fight other of the rebels in the hopes of having a government that turns out to American liking. I think the chances of this working are very, very small. But what I think you're missing is the U.S. government has decided that the Assad regime is no longer legitimate and it no longer will work with it. In this way, the U.S. government has joined with the Turkish, Qatari, Saudi government in rejecting the regime in Damascus. I don't think this is going to work for American interests. I agree with Mr. Mati that the Turks are the key actors here. I don't agree that the Syrian government is a truly better government than what would tie to Saudi Arabia or Qatar. Mm-hmm. I'd rather live in Saudi Arabia or Qatar than I would in Syria. They're all bad, but the Syrian one is worse, in my view.
You say that the United States deciding that the Syrian government is no longer legitimate as far as it's concerned. Now, countries like Russia, Iran, China, these are countries that have been saying that we are looking for a political solution to the situation in Syria. I'd just like to go back to Mr. Mackey on this. Your concluding remarks, Mr. Mackey. Do you think these countries that are looking and are pressing for this political solution can actually succeed in bringing about that solution with the international activity that's going on right now?
Well, first of all, we do not longer live in a world which is controlled by the United States of America. Ultimately, a government takes its legitimacy from its own people. Who are the United States or the European Union to give or take legitimacy from a state? What we ultimately have to understand is that there are people who support the Syrian government and in tandem give it legitimacy. It is not a concept of wanting to live in Syria or not. Syria in 2004 was the fourth safest country in the whole of the Arab world. Syria is a country where there are more social freedoms than Saudi Arabia or Qatar or the whole of the Gulf Arab states put together. Syria is one of the most historic states in the region. What we have to ultimately argue is that there are an emergence of a new bloc of power, the BRIC states, Russia, China, Iran, states which support state sovereignty and reject interference in the internal affairs of other states. What these states do is support a political solution in Syria, reject the arming of these armed groups by the West and by Saudi Arabia and Qatar, and try to project a status quo to the United States hegemony over this world and over this region. So what we ultimately have is a balancing act between the United States of America, their regional allies, and Russia, Iran, China, and the status quo, mm-hmm. which allows there to be a level of balancing between these two sides, which creates a proxy war situation in Syria. However, Russia, Iran, and China will never allow the Syrian government to be taken out of power through force or by a NATO military intervention.
Okay, I'm afraid we've run out of time. Big thank you there to Danny Mackey, co-founder of Syrian Youth in the UK, with us live from London. And also I'd like to thank our guest in California, Daniel Pipes, director of the Middle East Forum. Thank you so much for staying with us on another edition of The Debate. From Miho Malezgi, until our next programme, goodbye.